sana, which in Swahili means you are warmly welcome. So today we are very grateful to have Moses Mwanga, Pastor Mchungaji, Moses Mwanga, and Mchungaji, Pastor Eliud Payawela. And they will be sharing about Tanzania with us and a little about their stories and an overview of the country and life there. So we are grateful for them.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So, we will start with our life story. So I will start with my life story, and Eliud will start with his life story before we continue with the other things. So my name is Moses. You remember Moses in the Bible? Yeah. So I was born in a family of 17. My mother was a marital wife, and my father had another one. So I'm a fifth one in my family, and I have two brothers. One is normal, and so you can see there are two sisters between my brother and I. And so in my early life, I had to take care of my father's cattle and other stuff, cattle and goats and sheep. We normally had that life back then. And I lived in the southern highlands of Tanzania, Mbeya. And I used to keep those animals in my very early age. I started taking care of them myself when I was just five. And so I need to feed them to make sure that they just get enough food and good food. Just feed them, take them to the other side, maybe of some rivers. In Mbeya, there are many rivers. And it's highland, so you can see rivers are just running very fast. It's like the Snake Lake, the Snake River and Wenatchee River. There are no crocs up there, not even hippos, because very, very cold around. I remember when I was very young, I used to, again, there are several waterfalls around, and so sometimes I had to go to catch birds, those who are laying their nets just on the waterfalls. That when I was very, very young, and when I go back now and I see what I was doing, I can't repeat to do it again. That was very dangerous. But by then I could go and get some small birds just to eat them, because you know I was in a bush taking care of my family's cattle. I remember once my mom also, I was beaten really by my mom, because I had to use just one piece of log which crossed from one side of the river to other side of the river, and crawl through it to get some fruits on the other side of the river. I had my young brother, and so just fruits, and I took all that risk. So that's how I lived. I lived in a family of my father was just a peasant. He just had to produce for his family. And I remember one of my famous stories in my life when I was just seven, my cousin was almost drowned by one of the rivers, one of the big rivers. We had to take cattle to the other side of the river, and that cousin of mine was drowned. And I was very young by then. I was seven, as I said. I had to take all the risk to rush to a further place. As I said, rivers are flowing very fast. So I'd lead to rush to the one or to the front part where there was at least a sort of a small lake, and so rushed into the river. He was just coming up, and I just jumped into that small lake and took him out. I can't do it now, but then I could do it very easily. And you know, I was just walking with my bath suit. You know, a bath suit. Yeah, I was very little kid by then. So I didn't even know that the game I was playing was very, very dangerous game. And again, when I went to my mom, she just beat me up so much, and she said it was very dangerous for you to go to that small lake, because it was just very deep, and they even said don't go there and don't swim there. But you see, I was very expert in the water by then. He was very young, and sometimes I would take my young brother and throw him into water, and then he goes up, down, then I pick him up so that he knows how to swim. That's how I was taught how to swim anyway. So that was my story, and really I lived in a very small family. I'm a very, very small family, so to say, our house was just built by some pieces of wood. We would see those type of houses when we go through this PowerPoint. So I lived in that very small house, just made very locally. That's a typical life of most of Africans and Tanzanians. So I come really from a very small family, and a family which lived a very low life. We had but my father could just support for our food and our clothing. It was really a very poor family. That's how I was brought up. So I know how Tanzanians live. You know, the way you see Africans live, I really experienced all those lives of those people are living in a very poor family. We sometimes had to suffer, sometimes couldn't have enough food for our family. That's how I lived, and I grew up, and you see, I was the first one to go to school in my family. It was like when you go to school for the first time, you become like a backbone for your family. So they would just like you to do well in your school and so that you can help the family. And as you can see, I had my 17 relatives within my family. And so that's how I lived, and that's how I was brought up. The other time, maybe if we get time, I'll just tell the story how I became a pastor. But that's how I lived, and it was not easy because, you know, I was the first one to go to school. And by then, it was just, you know, that time if you go to secondary school, which is just similar to junior high school, very few could afford to go to that to junior high school. Very competitive, and you know, we were 82 in my class, and I was the only one who made it to junior high school. So it was very difficult, and it's like the whole village was surprised. Moses is now going to secondary school. so they thought I would be somebody, a big potato, and all. Now only this pastor, so you can see it was not easy for my parents to allow me to go into pastoral ministry. That, in short, is my life story. Thank you.
Thank you, my brother. My name is Eliud Payoela. I'm also a pastor from Ulanga Kilombero Diocese in Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tanzania. My story is somehow similar to my brother here. Again, I'm from a peasant family. We just grow rice there, and really, I'm from in Morogoro region, Kilombero district, the same area which I'm working. Really, in our place, it is a little bit highland because we have hills and some few downwards there. Previously, we just plant what we called this is oranges. It was a market crop, but nowadays there is no longer orange there. So we just depend on rice. Well, my father married two wives, and I'm fifth born in my family, and then I'm a second boy from my family, as my brother said here. When I was in 14 years, my father became blind, even though I have my old brother, but he was not really engaged in the family care, so I was the one to take care for my little brother and sisters. So when I completed this, we called primary school, maybe here is middle school, I don't know. So I didn't join secondary school because I have another task to take care for my little brothers and sisters there until they reach middle schools. However, God is good. I did struggle a bit, and I went in certain colleges, which is known as Bible school. So I studied there almost 4 years, and then I became an evangelist here, a little bit, I may say, a deacon. So I really worked as an evangelist for 3.5 years, and then I got a chance to go in theological school, whereby I meet with my friend here, Moses. Mm-hmm. We were the classmate in Iringa University College currently, but previous it was Tumaini University College at Iringa. So I studied there for 5 years, and then I was awarded a diploma in theology. And then I went back home to work as a pastor. So I worked at a parish pastor for 4 years, and then I was chosen as a cluster pastor, like my brother here. I worked in Ifakara, the place where the head office is, for 3.5 years, and then I went again to the college for 4 years, and then I was awarded a degree in theology. So from there onwards, I was in Tumaini as a teacher for almost 9.5 years, until on 1st April this year, I have given another post as a chaplain in Cathedral. I don't know if you know Cathedral here, but Cathedral is the place whereby the bishop is living and working. So we have a parish there, so the place where really I will go to work, because I just reported, and then we have young from here. And this is my senior pastor, he's giving me my place there. So this is really, I have married, I have 2 kids, even though it is not mine. I just took them from my sisters-in-law, who passed away 8 years ago. She left almost 4 kids, and I took those 2. The girl is in 14 years, and the boy is in 8 years. So they are schooling in this, what we call here,
primary school, I think, elementary schools.
Middle school. 2 years at home, there's primary school.
Yeah.
This is really my short story. Thank you very much for your attentive listening.
So I'm married too. I have two kids. I don't have to have 17 as my father, but I do have 2 of them, a girl and a boy. They are enough. So thank you very much for listening our story. Now let's come to our business then.
Novice.
There we go.
That's where Tanzania is. Isn't it the East Africa? Bordering Kenya, the north, south, we have Mozambique, and on the west, we have Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo. In the northwest, we have Uganda, as you can see from the map. Yeah. So, Tanzania. It's a union of 2 countries. The first one was Tanganyika, got its independence from the British in 1961, and Zanzibar got it from the Arabs. That was in 1963, towards the end of it. And in January 12, 1964, they overthrew the Arab rule and they became independent. And some few months later, in 1964. The 2 countries united, Tanganyika and Zanzibar, to form Tanzania. Yeah, so the size is twice the size of California, as you can see from there. And Mount Kilimanjaro is in Tanzania. So you want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, you come to Tanzania. Yeah. And again, Lake Tanganyika is the deepest lake in Africa. I mean, in the Africa, and again, the second in the world. Yeah. And we actually, our headquarter is in Ifakara. Heidi, can you locate Ifakara? That's where Ifakara is. It's in Morogoro region. Morogoro region is like here, states, we call them regions in Tanzania. Yeah.
Is your home on here?
Yeah, I live in Ifakara.
Well,
that's where I live
where
too.
You grew up.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I grew up here. Yeah, no, it's Mbeya. That's Mbeya, is where I grew up then. So when you come to Tanzania, you land in Dar es Salaam. It's 450 kilometers from Dar es Salaam. And you can drive 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours. It all depends with the traffic and the load. And one third of the, you just drive on unpaved roads because the roads are not good as it is here. Yeah. That is the headquarter. That's what we call cathedral. It's where the bishop normally go for worship. And I'm pastor in charge there. My friend is a chaplain now. Yeah. Now let's see the population. Two-thirds are Christians and one-third Muslims. But also there are these we call traditional religions. There are a lot of them. Actually, even some Christians and Muslims, they do go back. Formerly, we are all belonging to the traditional religion. We are traditional believers because before the coming of Islam, before the coming of Christianity. So we see sometimes even Christians goes back to their traditional religion in case they face some problems. So a certain percentage, they still believe in traditional religion. We do live as brothers and sisters, as sisters and brothers between Christians and the Muslims. Even in times when some groups will try their level best to make sure that we go into conflict with the Muslims and the Christians, we try our level best not to go into that. So normally we live like brothers and sisters. We do share many things in common as Tanzanians. Yeah, so that's how we live. We consider them as brothers and sisters. They are considered also, they do also consider us as their sisters and their brothers too. That's how we live with the Muslims. As we can see, the Lutheran Church began 100 years ago by German missionaries, and the number of Christians, the Lutheran Christian in Tanzania is now more than 6.5 million. Now it's the church with the most Lutheran Christians in the world. Formerly there are 20 dioceses, now 26. And maybe the other one is on the way to be born again. Yeah. That's our Bishop Renard Mtenji, his wife and their daughter. They've got another one just a few months ago. Her name is Lahema, but they do have again Valeriana. That's when, after he was just consecrated bishop, that was back then. He was very young by then, now he's grown, he's older than it is. That's Pastor Kelula. He was a chaplain by then. I'm not in that picture, but I was just somewhere. That's how it looks like inside that cathedral, our church there. And you can see I'm there. And yeah, I'm there, and the secular is there. Oh, yeah. We had some friends from here. They came to visit us, and we had a good time with them.
Recognize the back of her, yes.
Yeah. Sometimes we do use church building for other purposes. For example, we want to make some fundraising so we can change the venue to use fundraising. So we decorated it in such a way that we can use it for some other purposes. Sometimes also we do have some meetings in the church too. So we just put it in a way that it can fit our purpose. And then we had, I think, fundraising. Now, from the other, that's our bishop. My friend is there too, Eriud. The other one is Pastor Mporo, who is the director of seminary. You have heard about Tumaini. Later, you know, there are several Tumaini in Tanzania.
Tumaini means hope.
Hope. So,
yeah, hope.
But the first one to be called Tumaini was our school there. Mm-hmm. The others took that name for Makumila University and again for Iringa. I don't know, but they took our name to blend themselves in that same name. So again, so several to mine now in Tanzania and within the LCT. So, okay. Now we have two major units in our diocese. The Tumaini Lutheran Seminary, we'll talk about it tomorrow, he said.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
And then Lugar Lutheran Hospital. Those are two mission units know, those we go with holistic approach. So we both save, although we preach the gospel, but also we think it's our obligation to provide the best education and affordable education, and also to help those who are suffering from diseases. So we do have a hospital and a secondary school too.
Do these tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, but we should see that.
That's the way to Marini, to Tumaini. Yeah, that's the way how the Lord looks like. And during rainy season, you can see those on the way. So you need to be careful when you drive there, with a lot of people on the way. And some say the road is that they are not good. And also some animals on the way. There are some. Pastoralist tribes who just keep cattle, and you can see on the way a lot of them on the way. So driving, drivers need to be very, very careful on the way. That's one of the best houses down there. And on the other side, that's the house where me, for example, was brought up, and my friends here. Yeah. Those are the typical African, where a majority of Tanzanians still live. They live in a house like that one. Maybe we'll see it. We'll show it again later. Sometimes later we'll see. Yeah, like those houses. Mm-hmm. That was my place where we grew up. Houses like those. Yeah.
Moses, what is that?
They're burning bricks, ready for using them to for construction. Yeah. They cut trees and use to burn those bricks. It's now difficult because the government is against cutting trees, so they have to find the other way to make sure that they burn those bricks. So the economy of Tanzania, you can see there. Income mostly comes from agriculture, and only 20% of workers earn a wage. 80% now, so they will work in their farms and cultivate some pieces of land. So that's the average monthly income. So you can see how we earn there. That's why we must have at least other means to survive, because that won't make it. You won't make it per month. So that's how most of the pastors do earn per month. So it's very difficult to make it. So they have to find some other means to survive. Yeah. So now here comes. Everyone has a small piece of land we call shamba. And even those who earn sufficient sometimes income will have a small piece of land to cultivate. And you can see that only a small part of land is cultivated. But at least even me, I do have a piece of land where I can cultivate so that I can really subsidize my life. Otherwise, I won't make it with the little salary we do receive there. So farming is done mostly by hand, use hand hoe, and we depend on rain, you see. So you can't cultivate such big piece of land using just a hand hoe. 80% of the population are subsistence farmers. I don't know whether it's the best term to call them farmers or peasants. I don't know the best English word, but they are rather not farmers. They are rather peasants because they just produce for their family and maybe no more. And even if you produce a bit more, but mostly you put it as a reserve for the family. Lions are sometimes too much, sometimes too little. So there are a lot of changes also when it comes to weather. You cannot be assured to have enough rain in a particular year. That's an example of a small piece of land. We call it shamba in Kiswahili. It's like maybe 1 acre. Some can have 1 acre or 2 acre. But again, I said we normally use very local methods to cultivate. So even if I cultivate 1 acre or two, the harvest will just be very poor because we actually many people do use very local methods, and the seeds used are just local seeds too. So income from those shambas are not that much, and so but it suffices their family use. So that's education. That's the literacy level. 78, 83 for male and 73 for females, but likely 50% is in UKD. There are a lot of, there are improvements actually, because formerly girls, few went to school. Now, more girls than boys are going to school, and people are now serious education their girls. That's why my girl also is now finished her junior high school. She's of course going for senior high school. So now things are changing. And of course, most of the best schools now, at least if there are 10 best schools, maybe 6 of them will be girls' schools. If you see the best schools in Tanzania now, they are girls' schools, not boys' schools. So it's like there is this change. There is change. Yeah.
What is UKD?
Ulanga Kilombero Diocese. You can easily remember UK, so it's just a D, and then that's Ulanga Kilombero Diocese. So we have 7 years primary school and 4 years secondary school, which I said similar to junior high school. We call it ordinary secondary school, and then 2 years advanced level. After that, you go for university. That takes 3 years, unless you go for medicine. That can take 6 years, and then 1 year of internship, then you have 7 years. Yeah.
So, primary school, you learn in what language? In secondary school, what language do you learn in?
Yeah, actually, in primary school, we do have... Yeah, you can respond to that.
Well, in primary school, normally we learn all subjects in Swahili, especially English as a subject. And then once the students go to the secondary school now, they use English as a medium communication of teaching and learning process, except Kiswahili as a subject. And likewise in university.
So Kiswahili, primary school, all over English. We have a problem there in UKD, so half of the children do not complete their primary school. I was asked in one place why. Some are being dropped because of some are getting married on the way. Some are just being dropped because they don't want to go for further for school, with the schools. Some their parents are not capable economically to make them go to continue with their schools. So there are several reasons why men have dropped. They don't make it with primary school. And so when you go to secondary school, so less than 30% of youth go to secondary school. So you can see just less than 30% goes for secondary school. And of course, less than 5% complete advanced level secondary school. So the number is decreasing as you go up. Do you have a question, please?
And all of the testing is in English for all of these... Moving from form to form, all of it is in English, so it's very difficult to go from form to form, especially when you switch from changing from Swahili, all in primary school, to suddenly start learning all in English and have to be taking those tests in English as well. It's a really difficult situation for children.
It is like that, yes. It's very difficult for them because they have to change from Swahili to English. But there are those also who they go for English. Some of them, I think you know those who are coming from English medium. Are they making it well from experience?
Yeah, of course, in English they are doing well because they just continuing with the previous language they used. So it is easy for them to understand what is what, because they know English. For those who really typically use the Kiswahili in primary school, it is difficult. They come there first to be taught how even to address in front of people, even to greet in English. It is a problem. So we, as teachers, really, we get a very difficult time to teach them how to greet, how to do so and so. And then, while there, we have orientation course almost 3 months before starting regular procedure of education or these other subjects. So 3 months it is orientation, and there we teach almost English language how to address themselves, how to greet, how to do so and so. So after then, we start to teach them regular subjects.
So it's difficult for them, but sometimes it all depends with how the school is structured to help them. Because they need to have a very intensive English course before they jump for secondary high school, and they must build a bridge between primary school and secondary school. I did the same in primary school. I didn't study my English, so I knew about English from secondary school. But it has to do with the teachers being really well prepared to help those kids. Sometimes they help them well. Sometimes they're not that much careful enough to make it that they can really build that bridge from primary school to secondary school.
Eliud, does school cost money? Is there a tuition to go to school?
What?
Tuition. Does it cost money? Do the parents have to pay to send their children to school?
Okay. In these schools which are owned by government, nowadays it is free from elementary school, middle school, and secondary school. Only A level for these 2 years before joining university, but the rest of the studies is free nowadays. But still, parents are normally encouraged to send their kids in these private schools because really they are doing well. Preparing them, as the pastor said here, they have very good techniques on how to take care for students and how to nurture them. So parents really need to send their kids in these private schools, even though they have no money.
Yeah. So, you said this is the school. This is Bible school. In Tumaini, we do have both the two, secondary school and the Bible school. These trained evangelists, these are specially prepared to lead the congregations. It's like that, the church is up there. There are clusters, diocese, clusters, parishes, and small congregations. Those we call congregations. And they are led by evangelists. They are in a way similar to deacons, but I'm not so sure. But evangelists are really given the task to lead those small congregations. And they are under the supervision of their parish pastor. Yeah. Thus, we train them there.
All right. We may go fast now for a minute. You have to come back tomorrow for some of these.
So these are the classrooms in Tumaini. A hand was raised. There may be a question.
Oh, yeah.
Please. Yeah. You had a question?
Yeah. I was wondering, are the schools, religious schools, are they...
You say the schools are owned by the government. Are they public schools for Muslims and Christians, or are they religious schools? Actually, in Tanzania, there are both government schools, which are public schools. Muslims also do have their schools too. Christians also do have their schools too. In all denominations, actually, the Lutherans, Moravian, Roman Catholics. Roman Catholics own the most of the religious education, therefore the most of them. So it's like that every religion or denomination is free to build its school, but everything is under the control of the government. So you don't need to give your own exams. The exams are being prepared by the government. It's only how to take care of them, because the religious education is allowed to be given in schools. For example, even in government schools, I can go and teach some religious education. So we have some classes in secondary school, in primary school, even in universities, there are classes for religious studies. So Muslims can go and teach there, and Christians too. Yeah.
So are the private schools religious schools, or are they?
Some are religious, some are not. Some individuals do have their primary schools, their schools too. So, for example, a young man whom I think he was sponsored by one, some of our friends. He's now having his own school. So, an individual can have his school, only that he follows the regulation of the country. Primary school, we start at 7, when we are 7 to 14, and then secondary school from 14 to like 18 years old, and then advanced level, start with 18, 19 years to 20, 21. Well, a sort of, yeah. Anything?
Yeah, even though in the private schools, the government, they can allow students to start, people to start even they are in 17 years old. So it is allowed, not above that age. Mm-hmm. So in our school, we have some people who are really grown up, that are 21. They may complete this Form 4, which we call the junior standard school. So in private schools, even 17, 14, 15, you may start secondary school. But in government schools, no. You need to start standard 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, and then jumping to 9, 10, 11, 12.
I think even more than 17. Because my wife did study into mine, and she was more than that.
It was informal, for sure. You need to cheat someone.
But my wife did have. She did study into mine, and she was more than. She was more than 17. Mm-hmm. Of course, she was more. She had been 20 something, but she did study into mine. She could have a chance to study. You know, girls didn't have a chance those days. But she thought she needed to go at least to go for secondary school, and she had to go to Tumaini for secondary school for 4 years. So in a way, there are some flexibility too. The government is flexible in a way in private schools than in the government schools. Yeah. That's the office of Tumaini school.
That's
for tomorrow, okay. Okay. That's how the students do. They get up at 5 in the morning for exercise. They go for exercise and then their morning prayer at 7 a.m. They do use the Vespers that we do here, and they meet for morning talk. That is 7:30. And I think Edward knows this well because he was teaching there just very soon. Normally, it's the way they improve their English. So that's how they are trying to solve that problem of English. That's morning talk, very famous morning talk.
Tell us more about morning talk.
He can do it.
Well, in morning talk, student may be given a certain topic which is based in a subject or a certain story of their life, as we do here. So early in the morning at that time, after morning prayer, they come to the assembly area, which we call the smart area. Then a certain student who was given that task, he or she may stand in front of the students and the teachers, and then speak in front of those people for 10 minutes, and then other students will be allowed maybe to correct English language, and sometimes to ask questions or to give more elaboration concerning that topic. So this is what morning talk is.
The whole question is to improve their English. So class normally starts at 8 to 2:30, and teachers do, you know, teachers do move. In here, students do move, is it? So in there, teachers do move. So teachers do move from class, from one class to another class. I've been in one of the high schools there, I saw students do move, and in Tanzania, teachers do move from one class to another class. And when he's not there, she's not there, students do have their private study. So whether there is a teacher in their class or no teacher, you see them studying. Two meals are provided per day, each meal, mostly beans with rice and ugali. Ugali is a sort of stiff porridge prepared from corn flour. and it's one of the most eaten food. When we come to Tanzania, for sure we'll prepare you some ugali. It's all good, and you can eat with beans, you can eat with meat, with fish. But so good, so good. I think Heidi, you did eat some.
I did. Yeah. It was not my favorite.
Is it? Oh.
Rice, any day.
Rice, yes. So they normally use beans and the ugali or beans with rice. That's the mostly used food for students.
How do you eat ugali?
Do you use your hands? Mm-hmm. We don't use spoons with ugali. You just wash your hands well, and then you just take like this and just put it in some beans, and then you continue eating. Then you already see they are eating somewhere in front. After class now, they go for some other works too, and some go for private study. That's morning talk, famous morning talk in a picture now. He's trying to develop his case before her colleagues, and they're listening. They will ask her some questions and maybe try to correct her English so that she improves her English. They're in a class now studying. The teacher is not there, but they're busy studying. Now, madam is giving her lecture to students. They're listening.
It's the Kiswahili class.
The Kiswahili class, okay. So now they're being assigned to several activities after classes. And you see some of them. These were catering, I think, some stuff for you, Heidi. And some food and
boiling hot water on her head.
Yeah. Yeah, that was hot water from the kitchen. Just
and
to
is it warm in Tanzania or in Malindi? Is it warm there? Or is it cold?
Very warm down there. It's very, very warm. But it's very warm down there. Yeah.
But they were very cold that day. It was probably 60.
Yeah. They're clearing the ground. That's a football pitch, a soccer pitch. Soccer is very common down there. So they're making it ready for playing soccer. Very likely after coming from their holidays. So they're chopping so pieces of logs into firewood. Normally, it's the common means they use to prepare their food stuff. Yeah. She's washing her clothes, maybe some other clothes too. No washing machine down there. But we can wash our clothes very well, so don't worry. We just have our own means to wash them. Yeah, and she's doing that, just that. They're taking that sack of rice ready to prepare their food. That's my young brother. He's now a medical doctor anyway. Yeah. So they are winnowing rice ready for cooking. And you can see they are now in private study. They are discussing. That's after classes. So they just put them in groups so that they can have time to discuss some of the things they study in their classes. And these are the students that are sponsored by our friends here. I think most of you do give some contribution to this school, these girls. So there are 10 girls each year who are sponsored by our friends from East Washington and Idaho Synod. I think it is a woman group.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it has helped a lot. That's how they eat. That's now rice. And they mix it with the beans. And they eat together. Maybe after they finish that plate, they go for another plate there. They want to eat together. Yeah. That was then. And this is a kitchen they use for cooking. And those are the pots they use. And that's a cook.
Okay. Gotta wait for these.
Later. Okay, we'll come to it tomorrow.
Is there any internet access at all?
Yeah.
Is there any internet access at all?
Not really, but we are in the process of doing it. Tomorrow in the dining hall, we have a place for computer lab, so we will install some internet access to them. But To date, no. You can give that through phone, but again, students are not allowed to have some phone. So I know when I was in one of the high schools, they use computers, they can have access to books, but down there, no. There is no internet access actually for students to use. And actually, it's not even allowed for them to have some mobile phones too. So the answer is no.
But in general, Tanzania as a country, and in terms of people's access to the internet, like on smartphones, what would you say in terms of people in town who have smartphones?
Yeah, few are having smartphones, by the way.
Smartphones.
But just most of them, they do have this common mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
Few are having smartphones. I do have mine here, but very few are having those smartphones. They are even not accustomed to them. They've been using those old type of phones, and they don't like to move from that. But those who are having smartphones can easily go for internet and other stuff.
And there's internet cafes as well, in town
yeah.
as well. But
yeah.
in rural spots, it's harder to find internet.
Yeah, in villages, for example, like in Marin, you won't find one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is no internet cafe either. Yeah, please.
Breaks like summer break, or is school year round?
For students?
Yeah.
You can do it, Yuri.
Okay, in our country we have almost two major holidays. It took in June and December, and we have two breaks which are in Easter, which normally took April or sometimes February for 2 weeks, and then in September again we have break for 2 weeks. But I think it's like here, we use 195 days.
Teaching days,
so we can't escape from that. Previously, every school has their own timetable to close and to open the school. But from 2016, the government set a policy that you can't close or open the school as you like unless you follow the government regulation. So we have a single timetable for opening and closing the school for the whole schools.
You have a question? No, okay. So, Lugala Lutheran Hospital, that's one of the major hospitals down in Malinyi. That's the area which we talk about, Malinyi, is far in the rock, in the remote place. And the only means for people to survive down there is this Lugala Lutheran Hospital. It's the hospital owned by Lutheran Church, by our diocese, and it helps a lot. And people now can live there peacefully. They can go for some operations and other medical stuff, and other medical checkups, and to go see a doctor. That's in Lugara. So it's very important, not only for the church, but also for the people around, because it's really far away from town, in the village. So it's the only hospital. There is a nursing school down there. The nursing school was established because Many people don't like to live in villages, so they want to go to town. And so we had always a shortage of workers in our hospital. The only means we could do is to establish a nursing school so that those nurses who are in studies can also help in attending some of the patients. So they like reduce the shortage of workers around the hospital. And so others, we can send them there, and they go and train, and then we employ them by contract basis. So that was actually the aim of establishing the nursing school. And so there are some wards for women, and that we can see tomorrow. That's the hospital back then, and how it looked like. But now it looks like now. We had some friends who really helped us a lot to make it to the level it is now. Now that's our bishop and the chaplain. And you can see Risa. Lisa is there. And yeah, that's the nursing school. Now, with statistics, you can see the median age is 18. You just compare with the US. And life expectancy at birth is that much. You compare with the US. an average woman has 5 children, we can compare with US. Remember, my family is 17. Infant mortality rate, you can see 69 out of 1,000, and we rank 25 in the world. So now the major issue these days is non-communicable diseases. It's now really a huge problem down there. Of course, we don't lose sight on HIV/AIDS. Yes, but again, that at least is being dealt well. Now we have a huge problem on non-communicable diseases. Many young people are dying from that. That's the hospital. That's the lab technician. She's ready for work. And that's how things are. A patient and a relative. Normally, when you're admitted in the hospital, then you have somebody to attend you with both food and taking care of you when you're in the hospital. So it's not the responsibility of a nurse to give you some food or the hospital. So you must have somebody who will help you when you are admitted in the hospital. So those are patients and the friend and relatives who are coming to attend them. The couple are happy with the kids. They have twins, so a father is happy and a mother is happy too. So let's see, combination of part. But okay, all land in Tanzania are owned by the government, and 39 is protected national parks, and national and reserves. Actually, we have how many national parks? I think
16.
There are 16 national parks and national reserves. I think there are, I think 6 of them.
Nine
of them. Yeah, so 16 national parks, and we have at least 9 national reserves. And one of the biggest ones in the world, Selu, is also in Tanzania. The largest national reserve, the largest animal reserve in the world, is Selu Reserve. From Dar es Salaam to Ifakara, where we had our headquarters of the diocese, you pass through one of the national parks. That's Mikumi National Park. So on the way, you see these animals. You don't need to go very fast. You have to enjoy the nature too. So if you come there, we'll just pick you up in the airport, you pass through Mikumi National Park, just drive slowly so that you can enjoy those animals. There are these trees. Some of them see are sacred trees, traditional religion. They could go in such sacred trees for worship. Those traditionalists. I'm not traditionalist, but those traditionalists who go and have their worship on those trees of this kind. Yeah. That's a beautiful bed. Yeah, buffalo, that's in Mikumi National Park. A picture of those buffaloes, elephants, and the giraffes, and this stuff, so beautiful. And the zebra, and of course, the king of jungle, the lions. Yeah. So.
This is what we'll talk about tomorrow.
How do you get your plot of land to farm? Your little shovel?
Okay. You get from the village authorities. You see, it's like this, the government owns the land. And of course, now down there, the villagers in their village, they do have their own leadership. They have a chairperson. They've got some executives from the government who reach the village. And there you can go and they can give you a piece of land for cultivation. Either you buy to a friend who is having one, and you get one and you can use that one too. But again, you can go to a village and you get some piece of land. So you can easily get a piece of land down there and cultivate. Yeah.
And sometimes you can inherit from your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Can you describe the government structure from a village to a district to a region,
mm-hmm.
a country, kind of go each by each
level? Okay. I'll try.
It's morning talk, Moses.
Yeah. Do you have like a country there, Tanzania, Republic, United Republic of Tanzania, there is divided into regions. It's like your states, maybe, so if you want to compare in here. And then in each region, there are districts. you see a district, maybe three or four districts in one region, and in each district there are sort of wards, because divisions and the wards, divisions, in Kiswahili you call them talafa, you remember? Mm-hmm. So divisions and then wards, we call them kata. And in each of these, there are leaders of those divisions of in those areas. There are leaders, and then down in the wards, there are villages, mm-hmm. and yeah, that's where it ends. Vijiji, and then there are also, what do you call them? Under the village, there are some sort of groupings. Sorry, call them. I don't have the English name for it, but village is maybe it's the. The last part where decision can be made from the people. If they want, it's the main decision-making body down there is the villagers. Villagers can have their general assemblies, the villagers. They have executive council also from their leaders down there. So there are leaders in the village, and people can join there to make a decision of their own down there. So it's like they have their own government down there in the village government.
And what kind of decisions would they be making?
Concerning land, mm-hmm. concerning some of the problems around the village, in case somebody is bringing trouble, in case there is some disputes among the people, it's the village which makes decisions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it goes upwards. If they fail to solve that, it goes upwards then, mm-hmm. then to a ward, to a division, then to a district, up to a region, then to the nation. To the nation.
Mm-hmm. And there's a parliament.
There's a parliament, actually. But a parliament is like one of the pillars. Mm-hmm. It's like the government, the government's one pillar. It depends on itself and doesn't intervene the other part, too. And another pillar is the parliament is another pillar. And there is also judiciary, also, there will also this another pillar. So it's like a country has these three pillars. Which depends on themselves, and no one of them would try to intervene the other. Mm-hmm. So the judiciary system is free to operate by itself, mm-hmm. the parliament is free to operate by itself, the government is free to operate by itself. Mm-hmm. But the president is very powerful anyway, so he cannot almost intervene everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.